Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Startup Operators Weekly Roundup. The Weekly Roundup is a show for people like you who like to stay updated with the latest developments from the Indian startup ecosystem.
So what are we talking about today, Gunjan?
Well, last week we saw a lot of startups raise big size checks, and of course leading the pack was PhonePe's $1 billion fundraise. Wow. Right, but they only raised the first tranche of it. Mm-hmm. Then we have the whole story around Go Mechanic laying off around 70% of its workforce. And then there's Hubilo, which laid off around 35% of its workforce. And after coming under a lot of scrutiny by the National Commission for the Protection of Child Rights, Byju's has now introduced this affordability test to gauge whether their customers will be able to pay for the fees of the course. Mm. Right. So that and a lot more in this week's roundup. So stay tuned, folks. And also a huge shout out to our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Park Avenue. A lot to discuss, Roshan. How has the week been for you?
Well, week has been interesting, I should say. Yesterday, I caught Shakti in action. I never thought I'll get to watch them live. For those who don't know, Shakti is a phenomenal band put together by Zakir Hussain and John McLaughlin. They were doing their 50th anniversary tour and it was pure bliss. Yeah. So it's been a good vibe.
Nice. But you know what really brings along good vibes?
Not $1 million.
It's not $1 million. It's when you become the country's most valuable fintech company, right? At $12 billion valuation.
Holy shit.
$12 billion brings good vibes. So recently, PhonePe had announced that they'll be forming an entirely different entity from Flipkart. Mm. Right? And soon after this was announced, they went on to the market to raise $1 billion at a $12 billion valuation. Right? And last week, they raised $350 million from General Atlantic as part of the first tranche.
Okay.
Now, Razorpay currently is India's most valuable fintech, and I think they're valued close to around $7 or $7.2 billion, right? And if this funding goes through, then it will become PhonePe.
Yeah, which is, the way PhonePe has executed, right, over the last 5 or 6 years, and I've said it often as well that, you know, it was a genius move by Flipkart to sort of acquire PhonePe, and it deserves to be an entity of its own for sure. They're getting probably a 59-60x value multiple on their revenue, right? While Paytm is probably 4-5x of their revenue, right? So really not comparable at all. Payments is a very big thing, right? I mean, it's the tip of the spear. You get those users, you acquire those users, and then pretty much after that, you can layer all of those things, right? Whether it is, services and so on. And the way Paytm went about doing this was to spread themselves very thin horizontally, right? But PhonePe has been has offered the opposite sort of a strategy, right? Which is to really raise a sharp focus on payments through merchants and merchant partnerships and whatnot, and then figure everything else afterwards. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting, you know? I mean, this whole payment market with Razorpay and with PhonePe and the likes is definitely going to get a lot more interesting going further, because now it's the 2.2 of their journey, right? What are they going to do beyond this? And they've already, you know, started Razorpay, of course. I mean, you know, sells software, sells financing and all of that, right? What direction will PhonePe go into, right? I mean, given the parent entity is Flipkart as well, who knows? We might see some kind of a merchant platform integration, something of that sort, yeah.
Yeah. And also, I think they'll also tie in with the ONDC network, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of growth coming from there as well. And also, I mean, crazy team, right? I mean, here we had Flipkart, ex-employees of Flipkart. They formed a separate entity, got acquired by Flipkart while Flipkart was owned by Walmart. Yeah. And now that has been hived off into a separate entity and becoming a $12 billion company.
Fantastic story.
A fantastic story.
Yeah.
Well, then again, on the flip side, we have stories of companies like Go Mechanic. Right. Last week, Go Mechanic announced that it's laying off 70% of its workforce. Right. And well, I'm pretty sure that a lot of the media is giving ample coverage to what exactly went on. But if you look at it, this is like a typical startup story, right? They tried to run too fast, kind of inflated revenue numbers and raise money. And right now, they're not being able to raise any more money, and because of which they're supposed to. So Go Mechanic is backed by very reputed, very large like investors, right? So what should these investors do to maintain their properly tracking, they're probably doing their due diligence?
See, it doesn't require a lot of sophisticated due diligence, if you ask me, right? I mean, some of the allegations I'm hearing is that the garage and whatnot that they claimed was there was just on paper.
Yeah.
Now, well, just go and look at the garage, right? And figure the paper trail from there. I mean, it's not very, very sophisticated financial crime or whatever. Right. Even in the Sam Bankman-Fried case, right, with FTX and everything, This is the oldest trick in the book, right? It's like financial fraud 101.
Right.
These are not very, very sophisticated frauds where someone created a participatory note or something like that. Right? I mean, it's not any of those things. No policy involved, nothing of that sort. This is fraud 101, right? You're claiming something that there isn't. And I'm glad that, you know, due diligence is again back in focus, you know, because otherwise it had become a four-letter word in 2021 with the, you know, bull run that we had. And now there is just greater focus on, you know, running a proper business, because all of these startups, again, have to become proper sustainable businesses, right? And live, outlast the founders and whatnot. I mean, go on to be like 20, 25, 30, 40 year old businesses, right? And that's only going to happen with like proper prudence on this front, right? Otherwise, I mean, it's just a passing the parcel, right? I mean, and the founders make money, the VCs make money, the early employees make money and whatnot, right? But who really remembers any of the businesses? And what about the next business that comes in the same category that will not get funding or whatever because, you know, the previous ones screwed up, right? Or the opportunity cost of the money itself, right? I mean, the fact that the money that went to Go Mechanic could have gone to some other deserving startup. So there's plenty of questions that can be raised about this. I really hope that people get smarter, wiser about these things and not fall for the perverse incentives and play the short-term game.
So I was reading this Finshot's article, and over there was this letter which was sent out after the layoffs, right? So it kind of read, hey guys, sorry, we just don't have any more money to pay, but we can thank you for your hard work and stuff. So right now, with all of these layoffs that's going on, from what we saw in 2021, 2020, it was like growing at all costs. Right now, the conversation is becoming growing at no cost. And I don't know, like, I think this will act as a filter for starters that actually have sound business sense.
You have to find a reasonable midway point. You know, both are not optimal, right? Growing at all costs and then hoping that, you know, some miracle will happen and you will grow anyway, right? Or beating like a strategic retreat of sorts. You just have to be sustainable about it. And again, it's just 101, right? What are you paying for the customer to acquire the customer and what are you getting in return? That's it. When there is liquidity in the market, you have to play that game. I mean, we had this conversation with Anurakt of Club, right? And he was saying that, right? I mean, he was saying that you have to play the game depending on the macro as well, right? But yeah, I mean, these ebbs and flows keep happening and, you know, people, founders will do what is required accordingly.
So a similar story, right, about layoffs, but for a completely different reason is Hubilo. Hubilo is a virtual conference and event management platform. And of course, during the lockdown, we saw how platforms like Zoom and Microsoft Teams, AirMeet, all of these like were so much in demand. But right now, as physical events are back, as people are starting to meet more in person, the valuation for these companies have dropped, right? And Hubilo, as a result, had to let go of 35% of its workforce. So what about startups like that saw immense growth during the lockdown period, but right now, as we're returning to some sense of normalcy, they're getting affected?
See, people, I'm sorry to say, didn't price in the execution risk, right? When they raised at the valuations they kind of raised at. Right? They thought the good times will last forever. You know, I mean, you look at Zoom. Zoom was, I think, during the peak of the bull run, Zoom was probably trading at 85x the revenue, right? Which is insane. As much as I love Zoom and, you know, a good number of podcast episodes were shot on Zoom as well. And I still am subscriber of theirs. I mean, trading at 85x, what are they down to right now?
They are down to their pre-COVID levels. From around, it peaked at around $500 per share. Mm-hmm. And today it's trading at like around $70.
Exactly.
Right. So
it's insane. Insane, right? I mean, one seventh or 1/8 price.
Yeah.
I mean, all of them have seen a correction basically, right? So it again, you know, it just imputes a greater responsibility on the founders that they don't, you know, do this seesaw thing, right? I mean, during good times, spend money, raise capital, make sure that, you know, you have enough and more people, and then, you know, lay off all these people later, right? I mean, I think the focus has to be on sustainable businesses, and this whole process of creative destruction will create wiser founders, I suppose. Yeah.
And even Sundar Pichai, in his letter to Google employees, said that to sustain the growth they were seeing during the lockdown years, they did overhire, right? Yeah. Or they hired for capacity for that growth. But now, given the economic situations with the slowdowns and all, it kind of makes business sense to like downsize. But yeah, again, how it's handled, I think that is where the story
lies. See, the big tech folks have a different problem of their own, right? And which is that each of them, whether it is Google, Amazon, Meta, and the likes, they've been, you know, hiring anywhere between 25 to 40% of their workforce every year. Now, when you hire at such a furious pace, you double almost 2 to 4 years, right? And in the normal times, you hope that the churn will kind of take care of it, right? I mean, you have, you know, whatever good churn, bad churn on a yearly basis. But I feel, and this is just purely anecdotal, just from hearing, you know, many stories from the Valley and so on, that over the last 4 years, I think things have gotten a little lax, right? And you had this whole rest and vest behavior as well. People, you know, being employed for the food, the daycare and whatnot, right?
There were the frills that come with joining.
Exactly. And now that, you know, things are tightening up, it's only, you know, only natural that, you know, they've let go of as many people. And I'm telling you, even with all of the people they let go, they will still be at 2021 levels, I think, right? Or 2020, 2021
levels. So I think there was this chart I saw, it was of Netflix, right? Netflix had a huge increase in its workforce, and after its layoffs, it was still almost like 1.5x the size of its pre-COVID workforce.
Yeah. All of them had massively overhired, I think. Yeah.
Well, even Byju's was in the news for its layoffs, right? And more than the layoffs, most recently it was in the news for allegations over like malpractices towards sales and not providing proper refunds and stuff like that. As a result of all of these things, last week they announced the introduction of new sales policies and an affordability test for all potential customers, weeks after the National Commission for the Protection of Child Rights summoned the company. They summoned Byju's on December 23rd after taking cognizance of a report that alleged that the edtech major was pushing households into taking heavy debts. But right now, with this affordability test, I don't think they'll be selling the programs to any families with household income of less than 25 grand. What middle class would constitute? And I think that would be a large size of Byju's target market.
Yeah. See, again, right? I mean, if you raise the kind of money that you do at the multiples that you do, your targets are obviously going to be crazy, right? Now, think about the kind of valuation multiples that these folks were getting, right? I mean, 40x, 50x, 60x, whatever. Now, if your revenue has to sort of match up to that, it's going to be some astronomical number, right? 3x, 4x at least. How are you going to meet those targets, you know? Obviously, you're going to have very, very aggressive sales folks. And if you scale to, you know, 25, 30,000 people as Byju's has scaled, had scaled at least, right? I mean, things can very soon get out of hand.
Because not only scaled in terms of its workforce size, but also with the number of acquisitions it made.
Exactly. And so many different cultures and whatnot, right? I mean, having a tight handle of these is next to impossible. And so the allegation on Byju's was that, you know, they were kind of had partnered with an NBFC and were offering these loans to low income households and whatnot, right? Right. And these loans were very atrociously priced, had like crazy interest rates and whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, if those were true, then I really hope that, you know, some sanity returns and they kind of correct themselves, right? I mean, all the edtech folks, really. Mm. See, we don't want what has happened in China to happen in India, right? I mean, where the government just cracked down on all startup action and, you know, with a lot of regulation, whether it is gaming, edtech, real estate, etc. We don't want that to happen and likely will not happen in India as well, because China is autocratic, India is democratic. It will not happen, right? But really, I just hope that, you know, startups kind of figure out that, you know, we need to be in there for the long run and make amends themselves.
Yeah, I mean, we have seen like how the edtech companies are coming together to form their own consortium, right? And hopefully we'll see how this story progresses.
This episode of the Startup Operator Podcast is brought to you by Park Avenue. Now that we're all back at the office meeting colleagues and clients, it's time to ditch those PJs and look sharp with Park Avenue's range of 100% cotton, wrinkle-free shirts. They're super easy to maintain and keep you looking fresh through the day. So, my fellow startup operators, visit the Park Avenue store or myraymond.com and check out the new wrinkle-free shirt collection.
Last week, there was this break in this trend where we saw mostly early-stage companies raising funds. But last week, we did see a lot of late-stage companies raise a good amount as well. Of course, we discussed about PhonePe. And apart from that, we also have digital lending startup NeoGrowth that raised $10 million from MicroVest Capital Management. Then Darwin Box raised $4 million from Microsoft. Right. So good to see Darwin Box is back in the news again. I mean, they also had seen tremendous growth during the lockdown years.
They raised $4 million? Oh, okay.
I mean, it wasn't disclosed. Right. But Microsoft had to file it with the government, Ministry of Corporate Affairs or something. Mm-hmm. And it was pulled out from there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's a bridge round of or something of that sort. I mean, Darwin Box said their previous value multiple were a unicorn, basically.
Yeah.
Right. And I think and they also got a really crazy valuation as well, right? I mean, they're probably around the $10 to $15 million mark at this point of time in terms of revenue. So yeah, interesting. You know, I don't want to make this whole roundup about the fact that you raised at a certain multiple and now you have to live with the consequence. But really, whether it is the down rounds or the layoffs or the regulation, all of that, right? It's a consequence of the grow at all costs sort of a mentality. And the fact that, you have these sort of incentives, right? I mean, people are doing secondaries at Series B,
yeah.
Right? I mean, after the founder makes a couple of $1 million, right? Or even $1 million, right? I mean, it's different, right? Why will they not go out and get the most amount of valuation for them, right? I mean, the alignment has to be fixed somehow. And there are enough smart people to kind of figure this out, right? And I hope that, we get wiser.
I think we're just kind of like stabilizing from the shakeup the ecosystem got in terms during the past 2 years, right? And I think this will stay. I mean, we'll return to some sense of normalcy.
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay, so to our Park Avenue PowerPoint, there was this tweet by Romin Sheth, who had a conversation with Kunal Shah of CRED, where he asked him, "What does the rest of the world not get about India?" Right? And there's some very interesting points over there. Number one being, India is not a big consumer nation, right?
I disagree with almost every tweet in that thread. You can probably read every tweet and I can give you the counter argument to that, right? See, the thing is that tech folks, right? And there's not a, I mean, there's nothing to do with Kunal specifically, but broadly startup and tech folks, they feel like, because they've run a startup or whatever, they've kind of solved everything, right? I mean, even if you run a consumer tech startup, India is very large, very complex. And unless you've lived in, diverse parts of the country, unless you've seen various things, whatever, right? And unless you shed your condescension and live like a true Bharat citizen, right? It's very difficult to understand the common man as such, right? Because what I see in this thread are projections, really, right?
Let's hear some of the thoughts, right? So one, of course, India is not a big consumer nation. Well, that wrong. We have seen being proven absolutely wrong with the likes of,
But look at HUL, man. Look at Marico's. Who are they selling to? They're selling to birds and bees or what? Right? What are they selling? They're selling 5 rupee things, 10 rupee things, right? Fine. I mean, how long will it take for, whatever services to catch up? We're already at around...
Just seeing the growth of like companies like Pratilipi, companies like Coco FM.
Exactly.
Companies
exactly.
Like...
And a million subscribers, million paying subscribers. Not
even
less.
Stage, right? I mean, look at the growth numbers of Stage, right? Providing regional OTT content.
Exactly. A million subscribers is not less, right? I mean, a million subscribers is significant. 10 lakh people, right? 10 lakh people paying for, what is that? Content. Right? Right. Something which is non-essential, right? So I don't think that, consumer market in India is limited in any way. I mean, depending on the kind of solutions you offer, you could limit the TAM. Yeah.
Yep.
Let's see more.
The second one is Indian consumers are primarily men. Less than 7% of the urban female population has independent final income.
I don't know where these numbers are from, but let's assume that, maybe the bank account or the, card is registered, with the man, right? Okay. But that doesn't mean that the man is buying for themselves, right? I mean, that men are really buying for themselves. It could also be that the women are using their card or their bank account as well. But again, these numbers, I'm not very, very sure about it, right? Mm-hmm. Because we've had Jandan, right? We've had UPI, all of that stuff, right? So, I'll take it with a pinch of salt. And again, see what happens on aggregate, right? When you compare such large, diverse sets, right? It's the problem with classic problem with averages, right? I mean, when I say that, you know, I can say Sachin Tendulkar and me have like 50 centuries each.
Yeah.
Right? I can barely hold a bat, whereas Sachin is a legend. Right? So, these kind of averages and numbers, I'm always skeptical about taking these averages and numbers at face value, really.
Then there is another point. India is a low trust society.
I absolutely disagree. Absolutely disagree with this, right? India has, I think, what, 600,000 plus villages. And guess how many police stations we have?
How many?
Imagine 600,000 villages. How many police stations do we have?
Around 1 lakh, 1.5 lakhs.
No, we have 20,000 police stations, right? If it was such a low trust society, right, how do you think, I mean, there is some stability and some order in the country then, in that
case? For 600,000 villages, yes. There are only
20,000 police stations in India. Yes. My best guess is around 25 lakh police personnel.
That's okay. All right. Okay, next
in
tweet.
Total, by the way, 25 lakh in total, not just whatever, right? So it definitely isn't a low-trust
society.
There
is some trust then.
Well, there's a lot of trust. Okay.
Okay, then conglomerates like Tata and Reliance are able to launch products in 25 plus verticals precisely because people trust them. This is also why super apps have a higher probability of working in places.
Well,
like
this
India.
Is, again, this is 101 things, right? I mean, this is like looking at the...
But, so see, this is a case then why we see Tata launch its super app.
Dude, you're comparing something which is a 100-year-old brand, right? Or maybe 100-plus-year-old brand. Obviously, if Tata makes underwear tomorrow, I mean, they will trust that as well, right? I mean, there's nothing, it's nothing extraordinary about it, right? US may, if Walmart launches something, right? Or Nike or Apple or something launches something, okaat hoga yaar. I mean, people will trust it, right? So, I don't see that as a unique phenomena ki, you know, if Tata or Reliance launches something, you know, people tend to believe it. Well, of course, I mean, they've been in the market 50, 100 years. What else do you expect, right?
Okay, number four, focus is a curse word in Indian startups. India is a big market when you think of the headline numbers, but it's tiny on a per capita consumption basis. Startups can't become big by focusing on one product or service. The consumer class doesn't have enough monetary depth.
It really depends again, right? It depends on the founder's aspirations itself, what kind of a business you want to build, how much you want to grow it to, and so on. Again, right? I mean, see, while we talk about startups and everything, India has like God knows how many MSMEs, right? I mean, I don't know, 25 lakh MSMEs or whatnot, 30, 40 lakh MSMEs, depending on how you define them. Well, they seem to be doing all right, right? I mean, if you even want to talk about technology businesses, there are plenty of technology businesses that are running sustainably as well. So, yeah, I mean, see, comparing US dynamics with India dynamics when US is, you know, 1/4 or 1/5 of India, right, in population terms, and, you know, has at a $50,000-$60,000 per capita income, whereas India is at a $2,500 per capita income, and say that, you know, whatever happens in the US and whatever happens in India is like, at odds at each other. Sometimes it might come off as obvious. Sometimes it might come off as just plain ridiculous, actually.
But, so, per capita income in India is $2,000, as you said. But if you remove the top 30 million people out of 1.5 billion, then per capita income drops around $700.
See, this again, right? I mean, you have to sort of dig deeper in this, right? Now, why will you remove the first whatever?
Because... as per the thread, 70 to 80% of all discretionary spent in India is done by only 2% of the population.
So why would you remove the, you know, 30 million people? So if you remove 30 million people or maybe the proportionate number in any other country, it would affect per capita in a similar way. See, like I said, averages hide all nature of sins, right? I mean, it'll have numbers across the range, right? So I don't see the point, really. Okay, and again, it's a fallacy that you have to sell to 1 billion Indians. Why?
You just got to sell to the people that...
who are relevant for your product. That's it, right? As I said, see, Pratilipi, Stage, you know, Cuckoo FM, etc. I mean, 1 million, 2 million, 4 million, 5 million paying subscribers are fine for them, right? I mean,
yeah.
They don't have to sell to a billion people.
Okay, so there's a bunch of other tweets, but this one really like stood out for me. Credit cards are going to set off an explosion of new financial products in India. Historically, credit cards were given to consumers who could demonstrate stable income on record. A very small fraction of consumers given India is largely an informal economy. What do you make of that?
Now, this I kind of agree, right? I think, you know, the credit card boom is long due. We have, I don't know how much it is, right? I mean, 20 lakh something credit cards in India, right? Which is an abysmal number, really, right? Considering how big
more,
we are.
More BNPL users than that. Indian BNPL users.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Right. So the cards story in India will definitely rise. And discretionary income will rise. Discretionary spending will rise. All of this will definitely happen, right? I mean, and that's for sure. I mean, that is the whole thesis that credit is betting on anyway. So, so that I kind of agree with, yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Folks, you let us know what are your thoughts on this Twitter thread. I mean, we'll link it in the description below. Hmm. Awesome. Roshan, take us through some of the conversations you have lined up for this week.
Well, we have some splendid conversations lined up. You know, today I spoke to Ganesh Balakrishnan of Flatheads. We did this in person. And yeah, it was a phenomenal experience talking to him about, you know, his whole Shark Tank journey, then whatever is happening with Flatheads as well. I think, you know, this whole hustle culture is sort of glorified. But, you know, Ganesh has shown us the other side of things also, right? I mean, like he says, down but not out. Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to that conversation being aired along with a few others as well. We'll keep you updated on our social channels.
Yeah. To stay updated, do follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn. On Twitter, we are at Operator Startup, and on LinkedIn, we are the Startup Operator. And if you like the updates we delivered straight into your WhatsApp inbox, then check out the link in the description below. Well, I guess then that's it for our 99th roundup. Our next roundup will be our 100th one. And for our 100th roundup, we do have a huge surprise for you. So folks, do tune in live for that. I think we'll be... We can see we're doing it live.
Spoiler, Gunjan will be wearing a dress.
Well, I don't know if I'll be wearing a dress, but we'll be doing our 100th roundup live. So do tune in and join us for that conversation. And yeah, folks, have a great week and let us know what you'd like for us to talk about next.